If you're looking for the skills and tools to succeed in real estate investing, you've come to the right place. This show is about breaking through barriers, breaking through limiting beliefs, and breaking through to the life that you want to live through the power of real estate investing. You're listening to the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Brake and Quentin D'Souza.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us again for another episode of Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. Here with me again, of course, is Quentin D'Souza. How you doing, Quentin?
Oh, I'm doing well. How about yourself, Rob?
I'm doing great. But I love your enthusiasm. You're always like chock full of it.
Yeah, I was working out again today. I'm prepping for my Everest trip next week.
Some people lose energy after working out. You gain energy.
That's right. That's how I feel.
Awesome. What's new?
Lots of stuff is new. There's always things going on, but I've got an interesting article that I'm going to share. There's a how, and I think it's really appropriate because of our guest who's going to be coming on. So there has been a lot of funding announcements that have been happening around affordable housing projects and building them. And in one place in Ontario, Orillia, they've decided to build their affordable housing projects internally. So the project is actually coordinated by the county. Okay. So I'm going to get you to give me a guess here. So there is
me. You're going to put me on the spot here. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a guess. Okay.
All right.
So it's about and Aurora is going to find this interesting too. So they're building 215 affordable housing units at about 200,000 square feet. So that's less than about 1,000 square feet per unit. Okay. And this is residential construction. Now they have a little bit of office, but like, I think they have about 80,000 square feet of office, but office is really inexpensive to build. Okay. So 200,000 square feet, 215 unit. What do you think the build cost of this is?
I'm going to go with 100 million.
That's actually a pretty good guess. And I talked to you.
Because I went like double what it probably should be.
Yeah. And that's what it's exactly what I have a developer friend who works for, works with a really big developer in Ontario. And he basically doubled his number. And he came up with an approximate number at that as well. So about 103 million, I think he said. And right now, they have a price tag of $217 million for the project. $217 million for the project, okay? And I have some interesting kind of inside information that's not the right number. It's looking like it's going to be closer to $270 million for that project. So you're talking about almost $1 million per unit, and then you have $1 million per 1,000 square feet of office. It's like it's an insane amount of numbers. And this is what happens when you have like these projects that are not built. You know, they're built
to be profitable, right?
Yeah. Well,
they're not meant to be profitable,
but I mean, like, not in a reasonable way. Like, how can you know this is not built? Like, instead, put it in the hands of developers and have them develop, and you probably end up with, you know, twice or three times as many units as what you're going to get.
Here's the other question, Quentin: are they taking bids on this, or is this just some back scratching going on? Like, what's the deal there? Because if it was based on bidding, then you would imagine that the project projected costs would be a lot lower. And this is all taxpayer dollars, correct?
Yeah, it is. It's all taxpayer dollars. We should all be upset about this. It's not only federal money, but you know, this is local money as well that's going to these type of projects. And I totally understand where people are coming from, but it's just a crazy, crazy number. And
well, after the success of this, we can expect it to move on into different territories. This is the pilot, right? You know.
Well, you know what? And this isn't the only project they're doing. And I understand that they're trying to address the problem, which is definitely a good thing. But the amount of cost that's going into this project is insane. It is really insane. And it shows you exactly what happens when government gets involved in housing. You know what? They're just messing it up. And you know what, like the capital gains tax changes that have been happening, I've talked to many different investors, and these are people that I've known for 10, 15 years. And quite a few of them have decided that they're going to be moving their investment dollars to other jurisdictions outside of Canada. So, you know, that's kind of an interesting change that I really didn't think was going to happen, but I've started to see that more and more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're starting to see more and more dollars leave the country, and that is a scary thing. Not a good thing, that's for sure.
Yeah, I saw a meme or whatever you call it on Facebook, I think it was just this morning, where it says, "You are now leaving Canada." And then underneath it said, "Was it something we taxed?"
Well, just wait for the water taxes that we're all going to start getting across Canada, you know, because that's not taxed yet. It's cheap. So definitely, you know, something that they're going to have to tax soon, right?
It's time for full expatriation.
Well, you know, when taxes start to get more than 50%, that's expropriation. It's not taxation anymore. And I think that's what we're starting to see now in Canada, because the, you know, we're spending a lot more than what we can afford. And we're spending on things like projects that don't make sense. We're spending on apps that cost millions and millions of dollars that don't make sense. And, you know, there's no accountability. And, you know, to these politicians who are there. And I'm not really like a political guy. I pretty much don't like all politicians all the same. But I mean, like, this is just insane, like what's been happening over the last little while. I just think that, you know, there's a war against investors and business owners and people who actually are employing people in Canada, and that is not going to help the economy in any way, shape, or form. So
well, I think there's too many entrepreneurs and not enough workers.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. It's 100% true. I mean, if you look at it from a government perspective, I'm sure that that's what they're seeing, right?
Well, yeah, maybe they see that that's what they want to do. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what the whole school system is designed to do, is bring up workers, and it's not working anymore because people have found much easier ways to employ themselves, and it's not with the government agenda. So I'm not political either, Quentin. You know, you can't always just say you're not political and then launch into a political discussion. At some point, you have to, even if you're not for one side or the other, it's still political.
Yeah, I try not to, but like at this point, it's really a challenge for a lot of investors and business owners. You know, it's just very discouraging. You know, you've got, you know, if you have some money and you buy something nice, there's a luxury tax on it. If you run a business and it uses gas, you have carbon tax on it. Like, and then there's HST on the carbon tax. So like, yeah. You know,
I
like
saw your bill you posted the other
yeah,
day.
Yeah. On my Instagram there. It really is, you know,
do you want to explain that?
Well, you know, the carbon that was only 20 days of carbon tax, right? And it was, I think my actual cost of my gas was $77. But, you know, there are the transportation costs that come with gas. I think that ended up being $500. And then my actual bill was closer to $1,500. And that was all the different taxes that were, like, I think the carbon tax was about just like, I forget what it was off the top of my head, like $500 or $600 just from the carbon taxes that the federal government is charging. That is insane. Like it is just not a reasonable way forward for anybody. And it affects everybody. I mean, we like the I think that the way that it's being sold is, yeah, you're going to get money back. Yeah, right. This is yeah, if you believe that, then you know what,
It's
there's
like a
I've
grocery
got
store coupon. You get money back.
I've got some swamp land you can buy from me. It'll be fine. You'll be okay. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, I
Anyways,
gotta mention
sorry.
a few other. Do you have anything else?
Oh no, I got lots, but let's just keep
I
going.
have to mention for people to go over to breakthroughreipodcast.ca. You can get in touch with everyone that we've ever spoken to on the show. All of their contact information is in the show notes, and you can listen to all the episodes that we've done in the past. We're on like 200 and over 200 episodes of information that you can listen to over there. So go over there, breakthroughreipodcast.ca, and then go over to iTunes and please leave us a rating and review. You hear me say this on every show, and not that many people are going to do it, but it would really be helpful if you can just spare a couple minutes. It's actually super easy. You just go over, find the show and click leave a review, and it doesn't take long. It only takes a couple minutes. You can leave us a good review, a bad review. It doesn't really matter to me. Like, just tell us honestly what you think of the show. Maybe if you're going to leave a bad one, at least tell us what we can do to make it better. People we can have on, information that we can share, topics, that kind of thing. But please go over to iTunes and leave us the rating and review. We're almost at 400. So we just need a few more. I think it might be 400 five-star or whatever reviews. So, but whatever. Anyway, that being said, I need to. We had a contest, remember, Quentin? Someone's going to
Yes,
win three of your books. Are you still
that's
willing to
right.
give those away? Okay.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, I've got the names in my little tree frog hat here.
Okay,
Okay.
yeah.
And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to draw one now.
Okay,
That
pick
person's
it.
going to win the three book set.
Okay.
And they can pick, right?
They can
That's
pick
what you
of
said.
the out of the six books I've written.
Okay. Where's my drum roll thing doesn't work anymore. There we go. Okay, thank you. Okay. So this is Jenna Banana. Okay? Jenna Banana.
Jenna Banana.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I
As
love the
one.
name.
So I'm gonna go ahead and read her review here, or her rating and review. Yeah.
Just so
Okay,
you
so
know,
this.
Aurora, I've got this cute bobblehead of Rob. Every time he bugs me,
He brings it out. I feel like he should have his own voice though. But okay. Jenna Banana says, "Great resource. I'm not just writing this for a chance to win some of Quentin's books. I thoroughly enjoy the topics covered in this podcast. I'm new to real estate investing, first rental property purchased in Ontario in 2021. So not new anymore, but probably got some good experience from this one, if not more. This podcast helps me maintain my mindset as we go through the turbulent times with interest rates. Thank you for providing Canadian and Costa Rican content." So there we go. Jenna Banana is the winner. So reach out to me at rob@mrbreakthrough.ca and we will hook you up with those books.
Awesome.
Unless, is there a better way to do that? That's probably the
No,
best way.
that's the best way.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you for writing in and keep writing them. Maybe we'll give a book away later.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're
We'll do
not my
another.
books. I'm
Well,
pretty free to give them away.
we'll do another contest
Okay.
next month.
All right, great. And with that being said, let's get to our guest. So today we are here with Aurora De Leon. De Leon or De Leon?
Yeah, De Leon.
De Leon. We're here with Aurora De Leon to discuss opportunities to invest in Edmonton, Alberta, and why now is a good time, even despite all of those things that Quentin and I just spoke on.
Yeah.
So welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. So Aurora is a real estate investor, developer, and a local Edmonton expert. She's reputable for her forte in real estate acquisitions, development, and creating deals. With over 10 years of experience, she has successfully grown her portfolio of residential long-term rentals in Edmonton, Alberta, which is her home turf. And I met Aurora through a friend of mine, Arlen Dolan. And Arlen Dolan likes her, so I like her. That's what I say.
Awesome.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, it was a surprise invite, Quentin, but I really do appreciate it. And nice to meet you, Rob. And I'm excited to be here today.
Well, let's start out the way that we always start out and tell us a little bit about yourself, first off, and how you got started in real estate investing.
Okay, no, sounds good. As Quentin has said, so I'm here in Edmonton, which is my home turf, and we've been investing in real estate for about 10 years now, but it hasn't always been that way. My professional background is I'm actually a registered nurse, so nothing to do with real estate at all. I didn't grow up with it, didn't go to school to study investing or anything like that. But we became accidental landlords over 10 years ago. We ended up with two mortgages and just needed to figure out a way to hang on to both here in Edmonton. And the one good thing that came out of that really was to spur us to learn a bit more about how to become good landlords, because we really didn't know a whole lot. And then it trickled down into, you know, a little bit more about investing and how to build wealth. And that got me really curious and to learn more about real estate investing. And really my first official, introduction to it is through RAIN. And Quentin, I believe you would know RAIN, the Real Estate Investor Network. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it goes way back and it was, you know, really big here in Alberta. And so my husband and I started our journey that way in terms of learning. And as soon as we got in there, like I knew I loved it right away. It was like, oh, this is my jam. I can see myself doing this. And that's just kind of how we started. But we were at a point in our lives where we had really young kids and it was really just meant for us. Actually, we just said, oh, we wanted to build our portfolio of long-term rentals. And we just, every year we would save, buy another one. So we started using our own funds and we knew this was more we really just had a long-term trajectory with real estate investing and what it was going to be providing us down the road. I think it really shifted for me come 2020 and where I decided to just double down. As I mentioned, you know, my professional background is I'm a registered nurse and you guys all know what happened in 2020 and the mess that that was. So I think it was just a fork in the road for me that was just like glaring, where I had to make a big decision. And, you know, again, it was double down or just continue on this path that was just really, it wasn't for me anymore. So I told my husband we were just going to take all our money in 2020 when, you know, the world was going to end, and just bought a lot of houses. And in hindsight today, I was like, dang, I wish I had bought more in 2020. But that's what we did. And because of that, we were able to actually acquire quite a bit and allow our money to flow into a lot more deals fairly quickly. People got curious and started wanting to do the same things that we were doing. And fast forward just the last 3 years, I think it really just showed me, I suppose myself, that this is something that I could continue to grow and scale. And with where Edmonton is, we decided to go into more of the development space to continue to grow our long-term portfolio, but really capitalize on the new build and the programs that are available today here, including the CMHC MLI Select. So that's just been my niche now over the last, 2 to 3 years, I would say, is infill developments and multifamily here in Edmonton. So that's
me. When you were, growing your portfolio up to 2020, what did your portfolio look like in 2020 before you decided to scale up?
It was a lot of single family homes. And our decisions were really aligned with the lifestyle that we wanted to have. As I mentioned, I'm a registered nurse. My husband's an engineer and we both were working full time. We had young kids. So it consisted of a lot of brand new, actually. So
brand new single family homes. Up to, yeah. Like, are you okay with, like, was it like 10 or was it 5 or? like
Yeah,
about
I would say it was in the double digits. Yeah, like just low double digits at that
10 or
time.
10 or
And
12. Okay. And
yeah.
then when you got to 2020, what happened? Like, what did you scale up to?
So in 2020, we changed our strategy too because we didn't have unlimited capital. So we decided to do the conversions. So we did some duplex conversions. At the beginning, I actually just didn't have the capacity to because I was working. So what I did was I partnered with somebody. I was the financial partner, and I said, "Hey, I don't have the time, but I know that you're an expert at this. Let's do this together." So we did one, and we were able because we bought it so low, and despite the delays and despite the increase in cost because of the delays and other things that happened during COVID, we were still able to essentially get that house for free at the refinance, and so we were able to continue to roll our funds. So we ended up with, and then I learned that way, and I continued to grow and scale, and so probably in about a year and a half, we were able to add, we were able to like double our doors, doing it just that by buying at a really good price in 2020 and just continuing on with that strategy.
That's great.
That's
So you ended up
interesting.
another six or seven properties, and just did you was there cash flow that came from that? Like that changed the way that you were thinking, because your single families would have been older, and so they would have had a lo lower loan to value. Then you have duplexes that have a higher yield, but then perhaps have a larger mortgage. What did your cash flow position look like?
It was fantastic up until like 2023.
Yeah, you and everybody in
Everybody else.
Canada.
But one of the other things that we were doing is we really just wanted to optimize. I think I was at that point where it's like, okay, if I'm gonna double down, do and take all of our money, 2020, I gotta do it the best that I could in terms of that strategy. So instead of actually buying single family homes, we just bought duplexes, because here in Edmonton you're able to do that. There was no problems with zoning bylaws. So for a duplex property, you're able to put one suite in the basement or a legal basement suite, and you could actually also put another garage suite if you wanted to. We didn't take that route because from an economics perspective, that was too expensive. But so really, we started off with buying a fairly inexpensive like piece of land to begin with, and then adding the legal basement suite. So to answer your question, Quentin, actually our cash flow position was quite good. And if I were to compare it with people that were doing the same strategy as me, but were buying single family dwellings, they were definitely at a much higher price point, both at the purchase and also at the refinance. So for me, even after I refinanced, I was still probably sitting at like $75,000 to $100,000 in terms of the price, different, lower. So my debt servicing was lower, and I was enjoying that in cash flow. So
What type of, like, can you give me an example of what the cash flow was back then in 2020, like for a duplex?
yeah, for sure. For my proper, again, I bought it in 2020, so that was my unfair advantage, or a lot of it around that time. So at that point, I believe for like a duplex, and if I were to look at self-managing it, we would be looking at like 1200, 1300 for cash flow, which was pretty easy.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I
That's
know. So
awesome. You buy six of those and then you're okay, right? Oh, wait, you
yeah.
did.
So what was the reasoning behind, you said in 2020 the prices were lower there? Like you're right in Edmonton, so was that a result of people leaving the city? Because that's a lot of what happened in Ontario, where people were looking outside of the city, right?
Yeah.
So
Yeah, no, good question. I think 2020, there was just so much uncertainty. And so that fear that everybody had in general with what was going to happen in the future, whether they were going to be able to sell their homes, whether there was going to be anything past the year 2020 because of the pandemic, I think that just really resulted in a lull in the real estate market. And so there was a lot of negotiating power on our end. So some of the purchases were actually Like I would find them on Kijiji and I would, you know, negotiate, or I had the ability to negotiate directly with the sellers. And some of them were estate sales as well that, you know, were anyway, so they had their own kind of layers of complexity, but because we were coming with solutions and we were truly workable, because you know, we knew it was, there was so much uncertainty for a lot of people. Anyway, so we positioned ourselves quite well that way. And so we were able to negotiate nicely on the price point because we were willing to be quite flexible on the terms. So
Oh,
anyway,
cool.
that's how we did it.
Yeah, that's neat. So now that you've done that and you are where you are now, what's your primary strategy in growing in that growing market of Edmonton?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I love to talk about Edmonton. So the things that I learned after doing the conversions is, in as much as yes, the cash flow at that time was like really amazing and it was something that was scalable, what I didn't love was retrofitting. And for those that have done renovations, you know how much of a pain it could be. So I think that really just on a fast, I don't know, faster pace in my head, I was like, I really like this, but I hate retrofitting. So what could I do where I come up with, you know, products that I really like that I know is, you know, very rentable, quite competitive, but I have a lot more control over the design, the build, the this, the that. And of course it was, you know, went into new builds. And this was just right before the CMHC MLI Select announcement. So this was already percolating in my head where, you know, I think part of it is, you know, the courage to say, okay, I can do this. Other people are doing this. I'm sure it's not that hard to build, you know, new construction or infill. And that's kind of what led me to going into the infill direction, where, you know, you look at buying these old dilapidated homes in mature neighborhoods, ginormous lots, knock them down and really optimize how many units that you could put in the land. So that's where it really triggered me to shift my strategy to doing that. And at this point, that's really all I focus on. So I'm really hyper focused on that strategy because it works so well here in Alberta. And because right now with the funding, or at least the availability of some really good funding at this time is here, I'm just really capitalizing on that timing as well.
Yeah, that MLI Select new build rental financing, right? Or is it a different type of financing?
No, you're absolutely right. So the MLI Select, both for construction, the construction loan and then the takeout loan is what I've been using to finance our infill projects from the get-go. That wasn't always the plan from inception, because I knew that the numbers would work regardless if they were through conventional financing. And the reason why I say that confidently is because our strategy has always been long-term. Like it was wealth building. I wasn't gonna, you know, flip it or hold on to it for just a few years and try to make money, you know, with the hopes that appreciation will be there and make money over the spread. It was long term. And so I knew, even through conventional financing, that that was going to work. But timing really worked in our favor that the MLI Select launched as well. And we could get, you know, up to 95% leverage for these projects.
Is that loan to cost or loan to value?
Loan to cost, that you're right.
Well, why don't you break it down and explain what that program is and how it works?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So within that MLI Select program, there's different kind of offerings, I suppose. So I'm going to focus on the new construction, and that's kind of my jam. So under the new construction, there's it's based on a point system, and there's three different streams of how you can obtain those points. So affordability is the first stream, where you have to offer a certain percentage of your units. The rents have to be, you know, below 30% of the median renter income for your region. And then the second stream is the energy efficiency stream. Again, it's based on a point system. Depending on the percentage that you achieve, you're awarded a specific number of points. And the third stream is through the, oh no, it escapes me.
Accessibility.
Accessibility. Thank you, Quentin. And again, that one, to be honest, I'm not as familiar with here in the Edmonton market, but it's again through a point system. So in order to achieve the highest and best terms, and the highest and best terms would be up to 95% loan to cost, 50-year amortization, is that you'd need to obtain 100 points, either a combination from the three different streams, or you could choose to focus on one stream so long as you achieve the 100 points. So that's been my strategy, and primarily in Edmonton, I focus on the affordability, and now leaning towards actually both combining a little bit of affordability and a little bit of the energy efficiency.
Interesting. Now, just make sure that you explain loan to cost versus loan to value, because they're different terms, and if somebody gets that confused, they may not understand.
Yeah, no, excellent point. So I think most people are familiar with the value of a property if you were to just buy what it is. So I'll backtrack and use actual numbers, I think, for the example. I think people can probably relate a little bit better. So if a building to build an 8-unit here in Edmonton cost $2 million, but the valuation for it, so let's say based on income, the valuation comes up as, oh, but this property is actually worth 2.2 million. So you think, oh, as a developer, I've made that spread. I've made that $200,000. And so in essence, I could have this property for free if I get a 95% loan. That is untrue, because the highest that the lenders will lend to you is only up to the 2 million, 2 million value, which is the cost. So at 95% loan to cost for 2 million, you're going to have a loan of 1.9 million, and that's the highest that they will lend to you, not the 2.2 million. I mean, it's awesome, and that's why development is great, because then once the building is done, you have that like bonus equity. The value of the building is 2.2, but it only costs you 2 million to build and 100K, deposit, or it's not deposit, sorry, down payment essentially to own a building like this. But that's really like the best case scenario, and
Right.
that's on paper.
What is reality? That's what we want to know
Well,
here.
here's my question. You haven't, okay, well, I got a couple questions. First of all, Quentin, you probably know the answer to this. Is this based like province by province, the valuations that you used?
No.
So then being in Alberta is definitely a bonus.
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I think so. Like we're so just to give you an idea that I'm working on an MLI select on an existing building, but I'm using the environmental, like the components, to try to get to 50 points in order to get a debt coverage ratio of 1.1 and get like an amortization rate of 40. But you can also, like, that means you're going to invest in your building and you're going to change some things about your building in order to get that environmental improvement. And you do like an environmental assessment to be able to do that with existing buildings. And it's actually a little bit easier with existing buildings to get the first 50 points. It's a lot harder to get to the 100 points. I'm really interested to hear how you do it on builds. And I'm interested to know how long it takes to get from like idea, like, hey, I'm going to buy this lot, to like finished product in Edmonton.
Okay, we got a lot to dive into
Sorry,
then.
lots of questions, lots of questions. This is a great, lots of learning happening.
Okay, awesome. So where would you like me to start for
So
that
how for
one?
okay for I'm dying to know, how long does it take you to like Aurora sees this lot and she goes, yeah, I want to buy it. Okay, and then we buy it. Okay, and then Aurora says, okay, this is the plan. How long is it going to take you to get the finished build the city of Edmonton based on your experience of what you've seen today?
Okay, awesome. So this is my pace. So I'm gonna preface this. This is my pace. When I bring on somebody on board, I'm like, my pace is fast. We're going to go fast. So when we, from acquisition to demolition, so start of construction, I give us about 6 months. Okay. And then from start of construction to I guess occupancy, we say 12 months. So altogether, what I like to manage in terms of time frame is about 18 months.
Obviously, that depends on what you're building, though, too, right? Like,
So for me, because it's a, for me, it's really just, that's my hyper focus. It's just these eight or more. And when I say eight or more, we typically, like, the highest that we're looking at building is 12 units because of the size of the lot. And Quintus,
I can see,
got his jaw like.
Yeah, I know. I can see because he's going really, because it's taking us 3 years on the existing building.
You don't understand. Like if you're a developer in Toronto and you're trying to do an infill development, it can take 3 to 4 years just to get approvals.
Yeah, no, that's why.
Like, it is insane to me. Insane that you can build and be finished in 18 months. No wonder we have a housing problem in the rest of Canada.
Yeah.
Edmonton should be an example to everybody. This is insane.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm like, no, this is the pace that we're going. I mean, there's efficiencies in that. I don't know if.
But your approval, like, you can get an approval for an for 8 units on a single family lot, which is a big lot, in 6 months.
Oh yeah, and the reason for it is you bypass the rezoning process. So that's what we don't make it difficult for ourselves is the other thing as well. And I don't know if you're aware of this, Quentin, but effective January 1st this year, maybe not because you're just like, you're still so flabbergasted, but effective January 1st of this year, Edmonton actually did a mass rezoning. So a lot of the neighborhoods that they have, primarily a lot of these mature neighborhoods, they have allowed increased density to allow up to 8 units. For all types of lots, including the inside lots, and then for corner lots, it would depend on size. So that alone saves you your rezoning timeline.
Right.
But even our rezoning timeline, we're not talking years; we're talking like months for rezoning from the time that you put your application in, the time they, you know, they do the circulation, and then
I'd go year round. I wouldn't even bother with that. Like you said, I'd just go straight with
exactly.
The Yeah.
Oh my God. This is insane. I don't know. I boom, my mind is blown.
Yeah.
Like, this is
I have no idea how you're still making words come out of the stump left on your shoulders.
Yeah. That is why I'm saying this is my Alberta advantage, because you know what, Edmonton truly is leading in terms of the municipalities and how progressive we are, knowing that, okay, this is where we want to go. And it's funny because, yes, the bylaw was just recently updated and made effective January 1st, but even our previous bylaw did allow for more concessions of, you know, infill development in comparison to other cities. And we were even a lot friendlier with developers. So I do think that we're a lot ahead, and I know for a fact that for Manitoba, they actually used Winnipeg used the Edmonton bylaws, the old bylaws, to model the bylaws that they currently have, and that we've already changed. So that's how I feel that Edmonton is quite progressive as a city, and how there is alignment with where the city plans when they say, yeah, I'd like to have this many number of, you know, houses, because we want to attract this many number of new Albertans coming to our to live here. It actually, you see a lot more alignment in comparison to other municipalities.
For sure.
Because it makes sense. Like, holy cow. Okay, I got so many questions now.
I don't even know that it makes sense, though. I think it's just like we're just going to go for a thing. Because, I mean, I guess it's obviously.
If you want housing, you got to build it. Like, it doesn't come, like, you know what? Like, and how much does it cost to build, like, for your development fees per unit? Because
that one is an it depends. That one is an it depends question for sure. Like, oh, sorry, are you talking about like development fees?
Yeah.
Like,
so you're like, let's say you want to do your like an 8 unit on a. So just so you know, like, in, so for example, in Clarington, It used to be for a single family home lot, development fee was $40,000. Now a single family lot in Clarington, this is east of Toronto, like, and they're all about the same. It's $120,000 for a development fee.
Oh yeah, that's
so that's, okay. Blow my mind here. Like, let's say,
I was gonna say our prices went up with the new bylaws, and I was gonna say womp womp
You're
womp,
but it's
nothing compared to the number that you just dropped there. I think so for our development and building permits, and just because I can't remember what each is, but I think for an 8-unit, you'd be looking at around like 26,000 for both, like permit application. Yeah, plus, you know, plus GST, no HST. I'm not kidding. But yeah, plus some administration fees, if I remember correctly.
Oh my. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're not looking at like hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it does get approved fairly quickly.
Oh my.
It's this nice. Is... Like, okay, here's actually something I'm going to ask from the audience. If anyone's living in like one of these areas where they feel it is, you know, conducive to builders, reach out to us, because we'd like to hear stories of different places too. Just, you know, we like to have different guests on and learn different things, but a lot of times we spend the majority of our infos focused in Ontario. So I would like to hear things like this where there's opportunities outside, because like Quentin said, maybe we just need to be leaving Ontario, not necessarily leaving Canada, you know, in some circumstances, because there's
or just learn from other municipalities in our country. Like, why do we have to leave at all? Why can't
we? Well, you're beating a dead horse with that one. You can. That's that question will make your head explode. So don't even bother asking it, you know. but if any of you have like something similar, something where the municipalities have actually come up with some interesting and good progressive ideas on how to get stuff built, let us know. We'd love to hear these stories.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, if you have examples where people are actually building, you have info going in, like, you use it as a good example, don't, you know, and then model after it, like Winnipeg is doing, or, you know, another municipality should be doing. Anyways,
so, like, this show comes out in like a month or so, so you better start buying up more properties like right now.
I know. Yeah, I know. We're going gangbusters here in Edmonton because it is like hot. And it is just going to continue to do that in this market. And it's attracting a lot of investors for all good reasons, I think, not just, you know, not just from a permitting and bylaw and rezoning, you know, friendliness, but fundamentally, and maybe Quentin, you know, a little bit more, like, knowing Arlen, it's all about Alberta, and he's so bullish about Alberta. And so am I, after, you know, also being like living here, seeing what's happening, as well as being an investor for over 10 years, seeing the growth that we're seeing. So it is a really exciting time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. I mean, I don't want to get off too much, because I've had friends that have bought in Edmonton back in 2008 and 2009 at that peak. Yeah. The very peak of the market. And, you know, when they sold, they're in
if they had held on to them until now, let's say, I mean, if you can, I'm just saying, like, again, that sounds like speculative buying, right? But that's not necessarily what we're about, right? So I'd say, like, now, if they looked at it, they would see that investment completely differently.
Yeah, well, I think too, like, you know, back there, that was a very speculative market in 2008, 2009. And, you know, a lot of people who bought at that time, they didn't actually get their recovery until the last couple of years, right?
Depending on what it is that they bought. Like, you're right. I think it was probably 2006, 2007 that you're referring to. And then 2008, it was just no nosedive for sure. Yeah.
And then they didn't recover or didn't get their money back until, you know, but that doesn't mean that today, you know, it's the same thing. The fundamentals are very different.
Well, it happens, right? So, yeah. But on that note, let's talk about some of the challenges, because we've just been having our brains blown by all of the great things happening out there. But obviously there's some challenges that go along with it as well. So what are some of the big ones you've run into and how have you overcome them?
Certainly. I'm actually just gonna, I tried to write it down so that I could be a bit more succinct. Not that there was gonna be a whole list of challenges. I think I'm gonna just focus on the program, the MLI program. Again, I don't think that's the only way to do these types of projects, but I think if you were to ask yourself, like, what could I do today? I think that is, again, like such a optimal program to get yourselves into. There's no certainty of how long it's going to be available, but on the new construction side and in Alberta, it makes really good sense. So I think one of the things just to be mindful of, and everybody knows this, it's CMHC, so it's got this link to government, and they can kind of just change their minds if they want to, and without, hardly any notice, if you call it notice. And so that's always the risk. Although I think that for new construction, at least, from how I feel, and from what I'm seeing and in conversations that I'm having with folks that are fairly connected with CMHC, the new construction is something that I think is going to continue to be supported because we are still so far, far, far from the targets that, were set. So I think that's just one to be mindful of. The other thing is really the le like leverage. Leverage could both be awesome, and also, if you're not careful with it, could really be your downfall, truly. And if people are coming to you and saying that, hey, you can build or you could buy a brand new multifamily in Edmonton or wherever that may be, and you just have to put 100K, or you only have to come up with 100K, I think you have to be really cautious about that. And I could break that down a little bit more if you guys would like, because I think that's a big one that people get because it's such clickbait. It's like, oh yeah, 100K, that's it. But there are a lot of things behind the scenes that you really have to be mindful of. So,
Yeah, could
Quentin,
you break down a little bit of that? That would be great because I think people say, oh, I only have to put 100K in and I get 8 units or whatever it is, right? Like,
exactly. So in the development space, because you are essentially applying for the construction loan and you're applying for the takeout loan, you definitely need more than 100K to get a project like this going in terms of capital. You're looking at about, depending on the price of land, but you would be looking at anywhere between 350, maybe up to 450K as capital that you have. And that capital, overall, you're going to allow it to kind of sit there or do its thing, cook and work for about 18 months that we talked about at the very least. So it's not as like, oh, if I have 100K, that's good enough. The other thing to be mindful of is that even though they say you could get up to 95% loan to cost, that's not a guarantee. So you have to be okay to part with more than 5%, and you have to have that ready. I'll give you guys an example, and this is one of our projects. So the way that we the appraisal came for a project like this was that we were actually able to qualify for 95% loan to cost quite easily. And we used the benchmarks that CMHC set. We used the standard numbers that they wanted for the underwriting, and my broker was a very seasoned broker. Sent it over to CMHC application. And the person who just so happened to pick it up, from CMHC said, we don't agree with your underwriting. We don't think that the vacancy rate should be at 5%. We think it should be at 10%. We're like, 10%? Where are you getting 10% from? Like, are you not in Canada? Like, where are you getting the 10% vacancy rate? And it was back and forth, and they just wouldn't budge. And so it increased our equity requirement by close to 100K because of that one change in vacancy. So if we were to use the same numbers where we thought we were expecting to only have to leave 100K of equity, because of that change, it now became, 200K that we had to leave. And 200K in the grand scheme of things is still a good number, but my point in saying that is you have to be prepared. You can't just eat up the, the hype that, oh, it's only 100K and you're good.
Yeah, but what was the value of the project at the end? How much, like between your loan and the actual end value that you got, what was the actual value?
The value actually didn't change as much in terms of the NOI like valuation. So the equity is still there. Like you're absolutely right. At the end of the project, you still get to enjoy the equity. It didn't really affect the income valuation of the property as much, but it just we just had to be prepared to leave 200K versus the 100K that we had originally anticipated based on how the application
Right,
was
because
submitted.
you're actually going to run the building with your numbers, and those are the ones that are the proper ones.
Right.
So, yeah. So when you look at the value, the actual valuation, it's not going to change. Yeah.
But it changes your loan amount. That's the only
Well,
thing.
their valuation changes their loan
Exactly.
amount.
Yeah. Yeah. But exactly what the operational numbers are once you have that asset, it doesn't really change. It's just that it limits your loan amount at the time that you're applying. Another thing to be mindful of is, because we're still talking about the leverage, is that even if at the start of the construction they say, okay, let's stick with the 2 million numbers, you're able to qualify for 95% loan to cost. You only need to put an equity of 100K. Once construction is done, and you need to change from a construction loan to a takeout loan, your actual raise, or sorry, your actual equity will again be reevaluated based on the interest rate at that time. So what I mean by that is, so the
Interest rate
CMB rate,
risk.
exactly. So if the Canada Mortgage Bond rates at the start of construction was, let's say, 3.5%, and your loan that was issued at the time was based on that rate with a little bit of spread, you're okay. But at the time that your construction is done, let's say the CMB rate went up to 4.5%, plus lenders have to put their spread on top of that. You no longer, your debt servicing, basically your mortgage payments, are now going to be a lot higher. And that really changes now your numbers. So at the end, to keep things simple, what that just means is, you're going to have to come up with more equity. And they call it a buy down, which means, okay, you have to buy down your rate. Because we, the rates have changed, you have to buy it down, and for this many hundred basis points, you're gonna have to give us another 100K. And so these are all the numbers, and not numbers per se, but parts of the process that you have to be made aware of. Don't get sucked in the, oh, 95%, only 5%, and that's it. So I tell people upfront that this is the capital that you do need. It is very likely for projects like this in Edmonton to qualify for the 95%, but nothing is ever guaranteed. So you have to be prepared to have additional funds that you're okay to leave with. Again, the value of the investment as a whole remains. Like, it's still a good investment. It's just that you have to be prepared for those types of things
And
potentially.
interest rates drop as well.
So that's true
Sure.
too. Yeah, but they won't look, well, they could actually, they could. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So it goes up and down, and if it goes down, awesome. If it goes up, you just have to be prepared.
Yeah,
Can you?
a lot of people don't understand in multifamily that it's a big risk, even if, when you're closing on existing buildings, like you don't lock into your rate until a couple of days before closing. And usually what happens is you talk to your broker and they have you on the phone and they say, okay, the bond rate is this right now. Do you want to lock in right now? You have 2 minutes to lock in. Are you okay with that?
You could
Right.
be at
And
the
then,
bank having that call. How much do I need to bring for my draft? Yeah,
Oh
exactly.
yeah, I've been in weird. I've been at the gym. I've been at dinner. I've been like, and you're like, oh man, oh, not at dinner, like lunch, like out during the day, right? But like, it's just, it's insane, and it's a huge risk because if you locked in, and like you locked in, let's say March 2022, and you don't close and finish your financing until mid 2023, that's almost like a 2% increase.
Yeah, exactly.
People that's the on a debt coverage ratio perspective, you're going to be leaving in a lot more than you thought, that's for sure.
Yeah,
But if you're doing it in
exactly.
Edmonton, you're probably better off.
I would say so. I think the from a feasible when you look at it from a feasibility perspective, I think and for my projects, I said our range has been anywhere between 90 to like bang on at 95%, which has been amazing. But there is always that risk, and so when I work with my partners, I always just prepare them that this is what we need to be okay with. But I know you were going to ask me something else, Rob. But just one other thing is the with the leverage. So the other thing that we do for our projects is that even if we're partying it up because we got 95%, we ended up leaving just that 100K. Yeah, exactly. We're doing the happy dance. It is still so highly leveraged because the debt service
Yeah.
credit ratio is only 1.1, Quentin.
But it's a
Yeah. Only
50-year
1.1.
amortization, you said, as well.
Yeah, exactly. And
Jeez.
it basically just means that you just have to make 10%, like just a little bit more than what your expenses are, annually or monthly, whatever, for you to qualify for a product like this. So if you're simply relying on the way that it's
Oh,
underwritten,
right.
all you need to have is a little bit of vacancy, here and there, and you could find yourselves in big trouble. And so that's the other thing is even if it's not on the equity side, let's say that you need to leave a little bit more, we always come prepared with like a lot of reserve fund, like your staying power, because you will have those vacancies, like
Do you
guaranteed.
always take the full amount, or have you ever said, you know what, we don't need it. Let's be safe and just do the 90 or whatever.
Oh yeah, good question. So for us, we've always taken the highest leverage, and then we just have what we do is we just have the bit the
Reserve.
returns like
Yeah.
plumped
Okay.
up.
I gotcha.
Or
Okay.
sorry, not returns, the reserves
Yeah.
plumped up. Yeah.
Okay. No,
But
because we do have because.
that is a big thing, because not everybody would do that, and they're trying to sell you on the low amount of down payment. But in a non-rent controlled market, and I mean even in our markets, what happens or what can happen is you have a lot of building that comes in, and that building affects the vacancy rate. And when you have a ton of building, I mean, this is what they want, right? They want to have more building, but then it could affect the rents, and then therefore you could be under because your debt coverage ratio is 1.1, and if your rents go down, and or you have a vacancy, that you're going to be under every month, right?
You just buy the crappiest house in the nicest neighborhood and throw up an eightplex, and you're golden because everyone wants to be there.
You got to be
There's no
careful for
nim, there
sure.
won't be any nimbies in that circumstance whatsoever. But
Yeah,
anyway.
you must deal with that too, like NIMBYs, because that's huge here. Like, we have so many issues with NIMBYs, and I don't want an eightplex. I don't want a threeplex, right?
We did before the rezoning, but the rezoning, we're like,
Yeah, you
I
don't have to
know.
worry
Yeah,
about it,
exactly.
right?
It's like, sorry. It is what it is. But we did have one where we were actually taken to here in Alberta, it's called SDAB, which is our subdivision appeals board. And they basically appealed us. And so it delayed our but by a few months. But we were able to move forward with it. But yeah, we faced some of those for some of the neighborhoods, especially if it's like a particular neighborhood that isn't as development friendly or haven't seen a lot of the development, you see a lot more of that. But this time, because of the blanket rezoning, it's not really it. It's like a moot point now. So
Okay. Tell us about the Waymaker Development Consulting Program that you have.
okay, awesome. Thank you for asking about that. I'm going to tell you guys, this is the first time I am going to share about it. So,
I
bear
like
with me.
announcements. That makes us feel good. Rob and
Yeah.
I are good. He's going to do some forest bathing later and stuff like that, but sorry.
I
I was
told
all
you, Quentin,
excited. That was another
it's
announcement.
topless tanning, not forest
Oh,
bathing.
sorry.
Yeah.
That's probably for another episode,
Yeah,
but
that's another announcement. Sorry.
So essentially it's it, it I don't even know if consulting is the right word for it, but it's really me as a developer continuing to do what I do for other people who either are not local to Edmonton, don't know where to get started, but want a piece of the action. Like what we're talking about here today, you guys had your jaw, on the floor, just is in disbelief. So a lot of people are in the same position, particularly folks in Ontario, folks in BC, but they just are not able to do something like this because they don't have a team, they don't have time, they don't have the expertise. Typically, how I offer working with people is through a partnership, but this is sort of a different twist to that because some people are able to actually, do quite well on their own after the asset is established. They don't mind being an active partner. They've done asset management before. It's just they don't have the time or expertise to go into infill development. So what we offer, basically, if folks are thinking about investing in infill or new build multifamily properties in Edmonton, but they're not quite sure where to start, that's where we come in. So you basically get in touch with me, your boots in the ground. We find you the property if you like, if you have one in existence and you want to take us to take it all the way to an 8 unit or whatever, how many units could fit in your lot, then that's what we do. It's pretty much very full service. And we integrate you with the team that we have. And at the end, once it's built, we hand you back the keys so you can own the asset 100% and yeah, make bank over the next, 10 years or so.
That's cool. Very neat service. That's awesome.
Thank
So,
you.
I'm sure there's a lot more details that people can get. So where would they go for details on that?
yes. So because it is fairly new, best way is just connect with me through my personal accounts on Instagram. So it's aurora.deleon, DELEON dot YEG. YEG is Edmonton. Or you can find me on Facebook as well, and it's Aurora. DeLeon, and I can give Rob and Quentin my email address as well later on for you guys to get in touch with me that way.
Yeah, we're going to have all of your contact information in the show notes, any links that you want on there. So you'll be able to get in touch with Aurora very easily and get access to all of these services, which is super cool.
Yeah,
So
the
again,
brain blowing, stuff that we've been hearing today,
that's
which is,
your logo.
Yeah.
my mind was
Make sure it's
blown.
Quentin's actual head, though.
Well, yeah, because your bobblehead, that's
Yeah,
not gonna work.
you can't. Well, you don't want to blow that up.
I'm
It's way too much fun with that thing, apparently.
gonna leave that comment where it was, okay? What's a piece of advice or information that's always stuck with you, and how has it helped you?
I think that over the last few years, certainly, and actually it's our mutual friend there, Arlen, who's really reinforced this too over the last few years, is that it's really developing those strong, deep relationships. And he has a saying that he likes to say, where it's relationships is the new capital. And I really, really, really believe that, and that's something that is actually is a very real thing over the last years, decade of real estate investing that I've experienced. It really helps open a lot of doors for you, as well as I think you just get to connect with a lot of people that are like-minded, as well as really, I think with the relationships as well, what's really has been fun for me is that reciprocity. So when you develop these real, genuine, deep relationships, you find your people who you genuinely want to see do well, and then they want to see the same for you. And so I think for folks that are coming into the real estate space, or as you continue to develop your expertise, whatever it may be, I think really focusing on relationships and building those strong connections has been so tremendous for me. And I believe that would be the same for many of the folks out there too.
I'm going to
Great
agree too,
advice.
just in the fact that, like, a lot of times when you're, let's say, talking to family about the idea of investing in real estate, and that person, or actually, you know, it's going to be the majority of people that go, oh, no, it's not a good idea. I don't think you should do that. And then as soon as you do it and go against their advice, they're automatically like, well, you know, okay, well, good for you. Wait and see what happens now. It's not like there's oftentimes with people that are outside of the community and don't do it and give their great advice to not do it, are just like, they're not there to support you at all. So when you go to places like this with people that are actually doing it, they really do care. And of course, everyone wants everyone to be successful. And yeah. I mean, there's no such thing as sharing too much. I, you know, before I even learned, like before I got with Quentin's program at Durham REI, there's not a lot of people in everyday life that just want to share. And like, you know, just, you might do this a little bit because someone might call you about the program, but really you're just sharing a lot of your info for nothing, really. So, and I find that that's very typical in the real estate investing world, and it's a good trait that a lot of people have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree. And I think the right relationships could really elevate you and really do that, fast track you from avoiding a lot of these pitfalls and mistakes. And so definitely. I think, yeah, and Quentin and I know this because we both, you know Arlen quite well, and the focus really is on relationships. And it may feel kind of like, oh man, you know, it's not really as like you don't see the fruits of it right away, because some of these relationships that you have to build, you really have to build them over time. But once you have those right ones, man, they are worth their weight in gold. So I think that's one of my biggest lessons, and that's something that I continue to refine. Like, I don't need a huge, big like network necessarily. Although that is important. I think that inner circle where you have some really deep, strong relationships is really, really critical and really key.
Absolutely.
Give us now, again, thank you for sharing so much. This was awesome. I loved it. Very informative and fun. So thanks again. If you're going to give us one place for people to contact you, I guess the best one, what's the one that they should go to?
I think the best way is to through Instagram. So aurora.deleon.yeg, it's a public account. So you could add me, you could message me, and it's something that I'm able to see fairly easily.
Perfect. Thank you awesome. So much.
Yeah, thank you. That was great. And now Rob can go topless on the beach or wherever he wants to go. I don't know what he's doing today, but.
You actually somehow make that sound like, I don't know, vulgar.
Sorry. Well, it's better than the forest bathing pictures in my head. That was kind of weird.
It makes me just think that everyone listening is just going, oh.
I've been joking to Rob about his hobbies, but I'm going to leave it at that.
Quentin knows nothing of my hobbies. Those are all bobblehead Rob's hobbies. They're not mine. I don't know where they come from.
Well, this is great, Rob. Where can people get in touch with you?
Oh, with me?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Quentin. You can reach me at rob@mrbreakthrough.ca. And what about you?
They can go to quintindesouza.com or durhamrei.ca. And I'd love to, chat for 15 minutes with anybody who's interested in chatting real estate. I don't mind giving 15 minutes of my time. You can book a call at quintindesouza.com.
There you go. Awesome. Well, thanks everyone again for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.